Hello and welcome to the NTNU International Taiwan Studies Centre podcast, the place where we discover the latest research from the field of Taiwan studies globally. Now, for most of us, the word history simply means what happened in the past. But how history is told, how history is taught, has a massive effect on the way that we view the present and, indeed, the future. One of the fascinating things about history is the way that significant figures from the past can seem to live on, with different sides of their character, achievements, and even ethnicity being emphasized at different times, usually by different regimes and usually with a specific purpose behind it. Well, today I'm delighted to be able to welcome Professor Ed Vickers from the School of Education at Kyushu University in Japan to talk about a figure from Taiwan's history who has multiple identities. That is the figure of Zheng Chenggong, also known as Koxinga, or referred to as Teseko, depending on where you are and who's talking about him. Ed, welcome to the program. Maybe could you kick us off by describing the first time you came across this figure, Zheng Chenggong?
Yeah, well, actually, the first time I came across him was the first time I visited Taiwan, which was way back in the year 1993, when I'd actually been living in Hong Kong at that point for a year, and I took myself off to Taiwan because I had been tutoring in Hong Kong, and one family that I'd been working for was a Taiwanese family that was based in Hong Kong, and they offered very kindly to put me in touch with the grandparents in Taipei, the grandfather being a retired Kuomintang soldier.
Oh, okay, wow.
So I went and stayed with them, and I discovered Koxinga or Zheng Chenggong when I passed through Tainan.
Sure, okay.
Yeah, and I came across the Zheng Chenggong Museum.
Did he or did the museum make a particular impression on you at the time?
I was intrigued, and I'm ashamed to say that I'd never heard of him previously. At that time, the Zheng Chenggong Museum was, in fact, largely devoted to telling the story of Zheng Chenggong, and did it in classic fashion, largely through not very good series of oil paintings displaying scenes from his life.
Is that from his birth in Japan through his whole life?
I don't recall learning anything really about his birth from that museum, but it was very much portraying him as a Chinese national hero, celebrated for ejecting evil Dutch colonialists from Taiwan, from this corner of Chinese territory.
Right. So then, if we fast forward, when was the next time that you encountered Zheng Chenggong, and where was that?
The next time I encountered Zheng Chenggong actually was again in Tainan, just over 10 years after my initial visit, by which time the way that he was portrayed in Tainan, and actually in that very same museum, which was still then called the Zheng Chenggong Museum, he was being portrayed in completely different terms. So by then, he was basically being held up as an emblem of multicultural Taiwan. So very much foregrounding the fact that he was born in Japan, that his mother was Japanese, and also actually putting a rather different spin on his connections with the Dutch. So yes, okay, well, they fell out eventually and they were at each other's throats and he threw them out of Taiwan. But before that, he was trading happily with the Dutch and a bit with the Portuguese as well, emphasizing his own multicultural origins, his multicultural connections.
So by this point, his Chinese identity is being played down?
Yeah, very much so. You know, in a way, he's a sort of stand-in for Taiwan itself. Let's mention any other aspect of his identity we can think of in order to dilute his sort of Chineseness, basically.
Okay, so then within 10 years there, the change of government, the change of atmosphere on Taiwan means the same figure in the same museum is being used in a totally different way.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously the change of government is part of it. And of course, Tainan is DPP heartland and was already, and certainly from the mid-1990s. But it's not just to do with the change of government. It's more broadly to do with the so-called Bentuhua or nativization movement that, you know, really gathered steam through the 1990s.
So then moving on from that, where was the next place that you encountered Zheng Chenggong? Is that in Japan?
Well, of course, here in Kyushu. Yeah. And I have to say that, I mean, even when I toured the very much sort of overhauled exhibition at his museum in Tainan in 2004, 2005, I don't think then I registered that he had a connection to Kyushu.
Right. Okay. So what brought your attention to that?
Well, I mean, a colleague here, actually, who at one point suggested that we take a few students on a little field trip to Hirado, which is the town where Jun Chengnong was born. And we visited his birthplace.
And so then visiting Hirado for the first time and making this Jun Chengnong connection there, did that bring a whole new side to his character? How was he celebrated, or was he even celebrated by people in Japan?
Well, he's celebrated in Hirado. They have an annual Jun Chengnong, or as I should say, Teisei Ko festival in Hirado to commemorate the date of his birth. But that Teisei Ko festival doesn't really go back very far. It's an example of, you know, what we might call an invented tradition. And my impression is that there are lots of these, it has to be said, in Japan. I mean, any excuse for a festival, really. But I think when it comes to Jun Chengnong and his commemoration in Hirado, a lot of that has been driven externally, actually, because Jun Chengnong, certainly in the late 20th century and today, matters far more to people in Taiwan, and particularly in Tainan, and to people in China, and again, particularly in Fujian province, than he does to people here in Japan or even in Hirado. And so at the shrine that they have to him in Hirado, there is a statue which was donated by Tainan in the 1960s. That sort of connection between Tainan and Hirado at that, the sort of civil society level, really kicked off then.
Is that something that has continued until today without any interruption?
Well, there was an interruption, of course, when Japan switched recognition from the Republic of China to the People's Republic of China in 1972. And that led to a cutting off of a lot of ties on the Taiwanese side. So basically, Chiang Kai-shek, in a fit of pique, blocked a lot of ties between Taiwan and Japan, cultural, civil society, and the rest of it. I mean, for a while, he even stopped China Airlines flying to Japan. But I don't think that lasted for long. It's a classic case of shooting yourself in the foot.
Okay.
So there was a sort of slight hiatus there. But certainly from the 1980s onwards, that connection has resumed and increasingly thrived.
And then how does the mainland Chinese side figure in all of this? So you mentioned the Fujian province and how they've also been connected with Hirado and Jun Chengnong's birthplace and even this festival. How has that played out?
Well, Fujian province, of course, is the birthplace or the home province of the Zheng clan.
Yeah.
And Jun Chengnong's father. So Fujian province very much regards Jun Chengnong as a national hero. And so they were for decades really competing with Taiwan to sort of claim him. And a high point of that competition came in 1962, which is the 300th anniversary of his famous defeat of the Dutch, when there were sort of rival commemorations on either side of the Taiwan Strait. And in Xiamen, they set up a new museum to commemorate him. There's a big statue on Gulanyu in Xiamen. Xiamen, which was the main base of the Zheng clan in the mid-17th century, has very much sought to claim him in the way that Tainan at least used to do.
Okay.
And so I should say Xiamen is not the hometown of the Zheng clan, although it was their base during the sort of wars at the end of the Ming dynasty. The hometown is Quanzhou, further up the coast.
Oh, yeah.
And I suppose there's been a competition going on within Fujian itself to some extent between Xiamen and Quanzhou to claim him. I guess Quanzhou has been winning in recent years. They have an absolutely massive equestrian statue of Jun Chengnong that sort of sits on a hill overlooking the city. And there's a replica of that actually in Tainan on Taiwan.
Oh, wow. Okay.
There was a period in the early 2000s when the Chinese, and particularly Fujian province, was trying to use cultural diplomacy, and within that use the figure of Zheng Chenggong, to build bridges with Taiwan, as well as, to some extent, yes, build connections here with Hirado in Kyushu. So for a long time, you would have delegations from Quanzhou and from Tainan turning up to the annual Teisiko festival in Hirado.
Yeah.
You know, and they quite happily sort of fraternize. But that hasn't really happened for the last 10 years or so. The Chinese have basically kind of abandoned the field to the Taiwanese.
Is that a result of the Taiwan era here, the PRC not wanting to engage?
Basically, yes. Essentially, Chinese officials will not share any sort of platform. And we're talking about local officials here, but they are not allowed to share a platform with their Taiwanese counterparts, except under strictly defined or determined conditions. And so at occasions like the Teisiko Festival in Hirado, where used to turn up together, now the Chinese are absent.
But the Taiwanese are still going.
Very much so. One effect of this is to basically allow that event to become a Taiwan-Japan love-in.
Right, okay.
As you often find, I think, with the way that Taiwanese diplomats and officials present themselves here in Japan, there's a big element of sort of glossing over the darker side of the colonial relationship that used to exist between Japan and Taiwan, when, of course, the Japanese did care a lot more about Teisiko and were using him as a sort of symbol of Japan's, well, in a sense of the Japanese-ness that they were claiming for Taiwan, or that they were seeking to impose on Taiwan. You know, he was seen as a kind of, you know, progenitor of that.
So back in the Japanese colonial era, then you've got them using Zheng Chenggong as a historical connection of why, almost giving them legitimacy.
Yes, basically.
For being in Taiwan and having this connection.
Yeah, basically.
Whereas now it's you know, it's much more of a cultural thing and we celebrate a festival together, but we gloss over the colonial side.
Yes, exactly. So, I mean, the Koxinga Shrine in Tainan was first built actually by a Chinese official in the late 19th century, shortly before Japanese colonization. So it was originally built to celebrate Zheng Chenggong as a Chinese hero.
Right.
As the guy who defeated the Dutch.
Yeah.
Claimed Taiwan for China. But then the Japanese come in and they completely remodel that shrine and give it a Torimon, you know, the sort of traditional Japanese gate at the entrance.
Yeah.
And so they sort of Japanized it and basically made it a Shinto shrine. So Zheng Chenggong is annexed to the Shinto pantheon under the Japanese. And then, of course, when the Kuomintang came in 1945, they then remodeled that shrine again, of course, tore down the Torimon and the visible marks of Japanese-ness that had been attached to it, and replaced it with a gate that's still there now, which has the Kuomintang symbol, you know, the sun on it.
So it's quite a fascinating progression then, that you go from this symbol of Chinese-ness very quickly to becoming commandeered by the Japanese colonial regime, to then being taken back over by the KMT, the Kuomintang, as another symbol of Chinese-ness on Taiwan. But then, after all these decades in Hirado in Japan, you kind of come back round to having this softer, cultural, wonderful, historical connection that we share.
Yes, but this is in a context here in Japan where there's generally very little desire to look back at the history of Japanese colonialism, or at least look too deeply into it.
Right.
And, you know, this is connected to the general lack of interest in Teisiko or Zheng Chenggong in Japan today. It explains why his commemoration has been driven primarily by the Taiwanese. It's basically really because of that external interest.
Because the Taiwanese are willing to drive it, you mean?
Yeah. when they have this commemoration, now it's just the Taiwanese and the Japanese, basically, who are turning up for this. It becomes a celebration of this friendship between Japan and Taiwan, of which really the Japanese have only become aware in the last decade or so.
Okay.
So ever since the 1990s, in Taiwan itself, there's been this sort of reassessment of the Japanese colonial period and this tendency in Taiwan to view it through a sort of sepia-tinged
sure.
nostalgia. So let's not dwell too much on the fact that Taiwanese were second-class citizens on their own island under the Japanese. Let's celebrate the wonderful things they did for irrigation, railways, electricity, education.
Sure, yeah.
Thank you, Japan. And so here in Japan, that's, for better or for worse, the legacy of Japanese colonialism in Asia is just something that mostly people just cast a discreet veil over.
Okay.
Because it really complicates the story that the Japanese authorities have wanted to tell about Japan through most of the post-war period. Except that there is a quite powerful conservative ultranationalist element in Japan that wants to celebrate the legacy of Japanese colonialism. And so you have this uncomfortable convergence between deep nostalgia for the Japanese colonial period on the part of, you know, what a broadly sort of left of center leaning pro-independence types in Taiwan on the one hand, and on the other hand, these fascists here in Japan who want to celebrate the legacy of Japanese colonialism. And so you have this very awkward love-in between these ideologically actually quite divergent constituencies in Japan and Taiwan.
So somehow Zheng Chenggong brings these unlikely spectrum of left and right from Taiwan and Japan together. So in the meantime, we see quite a different story of the same guy in mainland China and how he's being used there. So whereas you're talking about in Taiwan, he's kind of become this celebration of, on the one hand, Taiwanese multiculturalism and also their connection with Japan culturally and historically, and yet something quite different from the Chinese side?
Yeah, well, I mean, on the Chinese side, I think there's two things I would say. To the extent that he is commemorated still in China, and he is, I mean, you know, there's a couple of pages on him in the standard middle school history textbook that everyone has to study, and certainly in Fujian province, he's still quite prominently commemorated and celebrated. But if you look at the story that's told about him there, it is very much exactly the same story that the Kuomintang used to tell about him. It's the story that I saw in the Zheng Chenggong Museum in Tainan in 1993. So whereas Taiwan has moved on and has kind of recruit Zheng Chenggong to the rather different cause of Taiwanese distinctiveness, Taiwanese nationalism, in effect, in the last 30 years. On the mainland, they've remained thoroughly loyal to the old vision of Zheng Chenggong as the Chinese national hero. And so that's the story we get there. And certainly in history textbooks, they don't mention at all the fact that he was born in Japan and that his mother was Japanese. So that whenever I mention this to Chinese students or friends, generally, they don't know that.
Right, okay.
In the Zheng Chenggong Museum in Xiamen, however, they do mention that he was born in Japan because you can't really
hide it.
Get away with ignoring it in a museum that's entirely devoted to him and his life. But they pass over it very swiftly. And interestingly, when they talk about him moving to China, they say, you know, in such and such a year at the age of 7, he came home to China.
Okay.
How you come home to somewhere you've never been to is an interesting question. But that, of course, perhaps reflects a very patriarchal vision of where home is. Yes, you really belong where your father belongs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Who your mother is, you know, really by the by in a Confucian culture.
So that's fascinating that we've got this idea of this Chinese national hero that was taken on by the KMT, looking at him kicking out the Dutch from Taiwan and almost uniting China as a Chinese, when I guess the historical story is that he, rather like Chiang Kai-shek, fled China as the Ming Dynasty lost to the Qing and set up base on Taiwan with the idea of going back to take back China, I guess. And yet now he's celebrated by the PRC as that original story of uniting China. Is that right?
Yes, although is he, or to what extent is he celebrated by the Communist Party in China today? So this year is the 400th anniversary of his birth. And you might expect that to be an occasion for great celebrations by all those who honour Zheng Chengong's memory.
Yeah.
You know, whether in Taiwan or in Fujian, China, or here in Japan. And really, the celebrations, to the extent that they're happening, seem to be rather mooted. I mean, I'm due in 3 weeks' time to go to Hirado again and attend this year's Zheng Chengong Festival. So we'll see how big a party they throw. I have been told that this year they're planning something a little bit special, but how special remains to be seen. But I visited Tainan a few months ago and really was struck by how little they are talking about Zheng Chengong this year of all years. So it so happens, coincidentally, that this year is also the 400th anniversary of the founding of Tainan City.
By the Dutch.
By the Dutch. And that is being celebrated in quite a big way. So all around Tainan, you see 400, 400, 400. Coming from Kyushu like me, you might assume that the 400 referred to Zheng Chengong, but no, not a bit of it. It refers to Tainan.
Right.
And when you go to the museum formerly known as the Zheng Chengong Museum, you discover now it's no longer called the Zheng Chengong Museum. So that museum where I first discovered Zheng Chengong has now had his name stripped from its frontage and it's been renamed the Tainan City Museum.
Okay.
And only in one small corner on the second floor is there substantial discussion of Zheng Chengong. And I think of all those rather inferior oil paintings that used to adorn the walls 30 years ago, only one now remains.
So he has a diminished role now, I guess. Is that because his symbolism as this multicultural figure of almost Taiwanese nationalism is less believable?
Well, it may be less believable, but I think the reason why it's less credible or less widely seen as sort of chiming with mainstream ideas of Taiwanese multiculturalism is to do with the implications of Zheng Chengong's, well, effectively his invasion of Taiwan, the implications of that for the indigenous Taiwan.
Right.
So he has for centuries been celebrated not only as a Chinese national hero, but, you know, before he was a national hero, he was a Taiwanese, not just a local hero, but a god, right? I mean, he was in essence, a sort of ancestral deity and celebrated as such by many Taiwanese.
Okay.
Because many ethnic Chinese Taiwanese are descended from him or his soldiers. And there's that aspect to his commemoration. And that, you know, remains. You'll still find Zheng Chengong shrines. You'll still find him, you know, commemorated in temples. He's still a religious figure. But in terms of public history, as the sort of portrayal of Taiwanese multiculturalism has become more complex and nuanced, and more people have become conscious of the complexities in particular of relationships historically between Chinese settlers and indigenous Taiwanese, Zheng Chengong himself, I think, has become also a figure of complexity.
Sure.
Not simply a hero to be celebrated.
Yeah. Fascinating how history can do that to someone.
Yeah.
So many different roles that change over time. Someone else that I wanted to bring in, perhaps as we come into land, is Chiang Kai-shek himself, because obviously there is this almost mirroring the coming from mainland China onto Taiwan, trying to treat it as a base. I remember my first time in Taiwan going to the Chiang Kai-shek Memorial Hall, and there was a lot made of the relationship between Chiang Kai-shek and Sun Yat-sen there, and this kind of master-apprentice thing.
Apostolic succession.
Absolutely, which I think was 2005. And then a couple of years later, going to the Sun Yat-sen Museum in Hong Kong, and I couldn't find a single thing, no picture, no description, nothing about Chiang Kai-shek. It was as if he didn't exist. I wonder whether there's any comment you've got on the way that Chiang Kai-shek is portrayed, or perhaps is changing portrayal in mainland China.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. I mean, there was certainly a period from the 1990s through to the early 2000s where that was marked by, you know, what Parks Kobel has called China's new remembering of the war with Japan, when there was a reassessment of the role of the Kuomintang and of Chiang Kai-shek himself. So, and this is connected very much to the patriotic education movement promoted by the Communist Party in the aftermath of the student movement of 1989.
Right.
And so in a context where the Communist Party is, well, not so interested in promoting a legitimating narrative based on ideological conflict between communists and nationalists. In fact, not really interested in promoting that narrative very much at all when they're worried about the weakening of nationalist authority in Taiwan and the potential weakening of Taiwan's commitment to the One China principle and reunification. But also, that sort of ideological division between communists and nationalists is much less significant in a context when the communist regime in China doesn't really see itself as socialist or anti-capitalist or combating right. vestiges of feudalism anymore, but actually presenting itself as the embodiment of Chinese unity. And so this theme of Chinese unity, one China, doesn't matter so much whether it's socialist or not. It's just there's only one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That relentless emphasis on patriotism and unity and we are all Chinese together, that increasingly is the message that the Communist Party wants to promote from certainly from the 1990s onwards. That aligns with a narrative of, in particular, the war with Japan that tries to emphasize that doesn't matter whether we were communist or nationalist, we were all Chinese, and as Chinese, we were all together fighting the common enemy, Japan. And so even Chiang Kai-shek in that context or in that narrative, he can be portrayed as part of that common national struggle. The extent to which he was leading it, well, a little bit sort of ambiguous about that, but he's part of it.
Sure.
And so therefore, you know, he can be talked about in terms that are not entirely negative. And so from the 1990s, certainly he begins to feature, you know, you see his picture in museums to do with the war with Japan. Rana Mitter wrote a little piece in the China Quarterly, I think around 2000, called Behind the Scenes at the Museum, that talks about how Chiang Kai-shek and the nationalists had dealt with what was then the latest iteration of the exhibition at the Lugoqiao Museum outside Beijing. Lugoqiao being the place where the sort of major Sino-Japanese conflict kicked off in 1937.
Right, okay.
And I visited the former presidential palace in Nanjing in 2004, just after that had been converted into a massive museum. So until shortly before then, it had been a military base. And Chiang Kai-shek's quarters in that complex had been restored to what more or less what they would have looked like when Chiang Kai-shek was occupying them.
Wow.
And the most popular spot in that whole museum was his former office. You know, so people crowding in there to take photos. Very interesting.
So that's around about the same time that his statues are all being thrown out of schools in Taiwan and placed in a park in Taoyuan.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah, so as his statues are being torn down in Taiwan, mainlanders seemingly get enough of him.
Yeah. It's fascinating to talk with you through these different waves of history. How important is it to you in terms of researching stories and cases like this for now, and particularly thinking of the field of Taiwan studies in the now, in today? How do you see this kind of research contributing?
And I think one thing that's important for the field of Taiwan studies is to, well, firstly, to be very conscious of the politics of the past and the perception of key episodes in Taiwan's past and key figures in that past. The narrative is constantly being reframed or reassessed or in the light of the politics of the present. But I think also what often doesn't happen sufficiently in the field of Taiwan studies is for there to be attention to the sort of comparative aspect of that. And what I mean is to think about how and why figures or particular episodes are seen in different ways, particularly on different sides of the Taiwan Strait, on mainland China as compared with Taiwan. I mean, Zheng Changgong is a very handy sort of window through which to look at those differences and try to understand them. But I think more broadly, one thing that perhaps doesn't get enough attention is the way that not just Zheng Changgong, but Taiwan's history more widely is told or obfuscated in mainland China. Taiwan studies, understandably, I suppose, the focus tends to be on Taiwan itself, and increasingly often emphasizing Taiwan's distinctiveness, emphasizing aspects of Taiwan culture, society, history that are distinct to Taiwan itself. But I think it is important still to have an eye for the connections with China and the way that Taiwan is portrayed, perceived there as well.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Ed. It's been a fascinating conversation. I've enjoyed myself and I feel like I've learned at the same time, so that's always positive. And hopefully we can pick another topic and go again another time soon.
Yeah, thanks very much, Josh. Yeah, been great talking to you. Cheers.
Thank you, Ed. That was Professor Ed Vickers from Kyushu University. Thanks for listening. My name's Josh. This podcast is produced by National Taiwan Normal University's International Taiwan Study Center. Please join us again for the next episode and check the show notes to sign up for our quarterly newsletter, which can keep you up to date on all the latest developments in the global field of Taiwan studies. Thanks again. Goodbye.